I have spent a good proportion of my life in academic frameworks, and we gather here under the auspices of London University and SOAS. Also, we are not a massive audience, so with your permission, I hope I will make a fairly rigorous presentation and ask you to walk with me at least some way. I hope that the consequence of the conceptual journey will bring useful products. So let me begin with one or two conceptual or definitional comments. The first, perhaps, with reference to the introductory comments by the sponsors and Professor Rapkin. I don't describe myself as a Palestinian Jew. I actually happen to be a Palestinian Jew. I was born in Jerusalem in 1943 in a country called Palestine, and the title of my birth certificate is Government of Palestine. That is neither here nor there, because it is significant only in a political context, and the political context that's relevant to my work and my advocacy is critique of Zionism. I'm an anti-Zionist Jew. But then again, in what sense do I justify the projection of my identity or a strand in my identity as being Jewish? I do not subscribe to any or to most of the 613 commandments or prescriptions or mitzvot which define Jewish lifestyle and an observant, obedient Jew. So in this respect, if I'm a Jew, I'm very much a sinning Jew. I'm a non-believer, at least a non-believer in the deity as described in scriptures that are alleged to be the word of God, holy scriptures. So in what sense can I justify the projection of my presence here as a Jew? And I have an answer which for me is satisfactory, and I invite you to challenge my answer. I'm a member of one of the many Jewish tribes. There is a rainbow of Jewish tribes. There is a rainbow of European Jewish tribes, of Arab Jewish tribes, of African Jewish tribe, of Indian Jewish tribe. And I happen to be a member of one of these tribes, the Ashkenazi Jewish tribe. I am regarded, at least by mainstream political philosophy in Israel, mainstream political Zionism, as being to an extent radical. And again, I wish to dissent at least to a degree, because at least philosophically and in terms of political science theory, I'm in no way radical. I am a disciple of the values of the French and American and French revolutions, of the principle of separation of religion from the state. And I take that principle one or two steps further, and I subscribe to the derivative principle of separation of nationalism from the state and tribalism from the state. So I have no problem with my tribal identity. I pick and choose some of the cultural baggage that I had inherited, being born into this particular concept, celebrate the parts that are consistent with the values of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and mind you, there aren't too many, and reject and deny the sections of my cultural baggage and cultural heritage that are not consistent with the values of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So it is in this capacity that I address you, and we had agreed among us that we would devote about 1 hour to presentation and the latter hour to discussion, and I would welcome challenge or support for the position that I represent. I did suggest or did ask for your permission to walk with me somewhat It could be a controversial narrative, and it might rub some of you the wrong way, but give me the credit of a guest and a speaker, and perhaps my previous record, and allow me go that way. I suggest that we go, at least to an extent, with the political Zionist narrative and see where it takes us. A mainstream argument in political Zionist advocacy, defense of the right of the State of Israel to exist as a Jewish state, is that the Jewish people, the Jewish communities worldwide, represent a Jewish people. And I'm old enough to remember a vicious and ferocious discussions within and outside the ranks of Palestine Solidarity. Are Jewish communities worldwide a people or a religion? A person whom I regard as a teacher and whom I very much admire, Rabbi Elmer Berger, he's now deceased, spent much of his massive intellectual and other resources in defending the position that Judaism is only a religion and that projecting Jewish communities worldwide as a Jewish people is wholly unfounded and wrong theologically, politically, morally, in every regard. And as much as I admire Elmer Berger, I want to suggest that we suspend this debate and go along with the mainstream political Zionist advocates and say, okay, let's accept that there is a Jewish people. The next step is, well, if you accept that there is a Jewish people, then like all other peoples, they have the right for national self-determination. And again, the debate has raged for many decades whether Jews have the right for national self-determination, and I again suggest that we suspend the debate and walk along with the argument and say, okay, the Jewish people have the right for national self-determination. The following step is that if they have the right for national self-determination, then they have the right for a state of their own, a Jewish state. Now, if any one of you would care to do their homework and research properly, they would come along articles and debates in which I've been an active participant and a vocal opponent to the idea of a Jewish state, arguing that a Jewish state is by definition an apartheid state. You can't have a Jewish state that is not an apartheid state. And again, I suggest that at least for the purpose of this conference, this discussion, we bracket the question and say, okay, if there is a Jewish people, they have the right for national self-determination, there is a right for a Jewish state. I also belong to the camp that for many decades have argued that the entire gamut of UN resolutions relevant to the question of Palestine represent an important defense of Palestinian rights. All UN resolutions, not just those that I like or dislike, or those that the opposite party likes or dislikes, but all UN resolutions taken together, bundled together, represent a good defense of Palestinian rights. That includes not only Resolution 194, underpinning the right of the 1948 Palestine refugees to return and to their titles, to their properties inside Israel. It also includes Resolution 181, recommending the partition of a country called Palestine into three components, not just two components, a Jewish state, an Arab state, and a corpus separatum, the city of Jerusalem, under an international regime administered by the UN. So all UN resolutions, and of course, at least until the past 15 or 20 years, mainstream Zionist advocates anchored their argument and the legitimacy of the Jewish state in that resolution. So if I accept all UN resolutions, I really shouldn't pin my primary quarrel with the term the Jewish state. It entered through the resolutions into international legal narrative. So there we go, there is a Jewish people, they have a right of self-determination and a state of their own within the context of all UN resolutions. Now the interesting question. At least provisionally, let us grant the opposite party this argument. There remains a critical question. What do you claim you have the right to do in the name of the Jewish people, in the name of the right for national self-determination, in the name of the Jewish state? If you claim that the fact that there is a Jewish people and the people have the right for national self-determination and a Jewish state entitles the leadership and the army of that people to perpetrate crimes against humanity, ethnic cleansing, destroy and raise to the ground hundreds of indigenous localities, rural and urban, if that is your claim, then it's just not on. The only response to such a claim is resistance. If, on the other hand, you would claim that the Jewish people and the right of national self-determination and the entitlement to a Jewish state should be implemented in conformity to all UN resolutions and the values of the 30 articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, then there is something to talk about. For instance, implement, not just recognize, implement the right of all 1948 Palestine refugees to freedom of choice of return and definitely the titles to their property. Implement all UN resolutions, including resolutions on Jerusalem, and that means Jerusalem is not the eternal capital of the State of Israel, but an international city. Implement UN Resolution 181, including its constitutional sections and citizenship. And its constitutional sections outline for the Jewish state and the Arab state a liberal democratic constitution very much akin to the constitution of South Africa, the new South Africa, or the constitution of the United States. Not the practice of the United States, the constitution of the United States. Implement the stipulations on citizenship where they say in 181 resolution that any person ordinarily resident in the territory allocated for the Jewish state has the right for Jewish state citizenship, and any person ordinarily resident in the territories allocated by the UN for the Arab state has the right for Arab state citizenship. What do you get if you implement all UN resolutions in this framework? You get basically a federal arrangement consisting of three components, Jewish state, Arab state, and an international city of Jerusalem, bound together by economic union, and we know what an economic union can do. We have it unfolding in the European Union today. And you have a democratic constitution, you have freedom of residence, freedom of choice of location of labor, and access to housing. There is what emerges, at least to my mind, is a fairly decent environment to raise a family. There is only one thing missing in this scenario. There is no demographic majority of ethnic Jews. There is no demographic majority of Jewish tribes in this arrangement. And the crux of our argument against political Zionism is not about an argument, a conceptual argument, about whether or not Jews constitute a people or otherwise, whether the Jewish people have the right for national self-determination or otherwise, whether the idea of a Jewish state is an idea that stinks or otherwise. It's whether it is justified to attempt to establish in a country called Palestine a sovereign entity called the Jewish state or the state of Israel, that attempts to guarantee in law and in practice a demographic majority of ethnic Jews, a demographic majority of the Jewish tribes. The party that says that it's justified, it's necessary, it's inevitable, it's progressive, it's enlightening or whatever, belongs to the political Zionist camp and, have no mistake, argues for apartheid. Implementation in law and in practice, not just in practice, but in law, a demographic attempt, it never succeeds, attempts to implement in law, guarantee a demographic majority of any constituency is apartheid. Apartheid uses the legal instruments available to the state in order to attempt to guarantee discrimination and implement discrimination. And reference was made to a work that I had published by Zed Books two or three years back, Apartheid Israel. That is exactly the case. Immediately in the first decade after the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948, the strategic pieces of legislation were put in place in order to secure that in the area that is at the core of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, question of control of land and subsoil, land tenure in Israel, access to land and housing, access to water, is controlled and legislated on an apartheid basis, implemented through the legal system, the law enforcement instruments of the state, and the practical result of that is the ethnic cleansing of the country of Palestine in the course of and in the wake of the 1948-49 war. So the lines are clearly divided, and the core argument is, are you for or against? Can you justify or can you not justify it? Do you support or do you resist a settler colonial project that attempts to consolidate in law and in practice an apartheid system in the country of Palestine? The pro-Zionist or pro-Israel lobby has lost much of its ground in arena of moral or principled discussion. And they are in a defensive position in universities or in any other environment that regards as relevant normative and ethical references and references to a sense of fairness and decency. And the retreat of the pro-Israel or pro-Zionist lobby from university campuses represents an achievement of which we can be very proud. It's an important beginning. And the achievement was gained through decades of Palestine solidarity work at many, many levels, both inside Palestine and outside Palestine, both at trade union levels and at student levels. It had not been able to get to this stage without the consistent and heroic resistance of the Palestinian people themselves, represented by the PLO and the achievement of the PLO in gaining UN recognition as the representative of the Palestinian people. As all of us are aware, the PLO has had its period of achievement and progress and success, as well as achievement of decline, notably since the strategically horrendous mistake of engaging in the Oslo peace negotiations, alleged peace negotiations, peace process. And we are facing today a circumstance that is perhaps more difficult to negotiate than immediately in the wake of the 1967 war. But in the context of this difficulty, I want to point out to the indications of resurgence on a very sound and strategically promising basis, the campaign for divestment, boycott, and sanctions against the State of Israel. And I would like to add my voice to all fora, academic, trade union, and other, working towards the development of of divestment and boycott and sanctions against the government of the State of Israel, the apartheid government of the State of Israel, the government of the State of Israel that stands in violation of most UN General Assembly and Security Council resolutions. And to do so on an apartheid basis is productive. We, to the extent that I'm allowed to say we lost one massive achievement of the Palestinian resistance, And that is the passage by the United Nations of the resolution identifying Zionism as a form of racism and racial discrimination. That resolution has been struck off the book of resolution of the UN. The opposite party worked very hard to get it struck off. They knew the significance of that resolution. They were aware that this resolution represented the international legal basis for sanctions against the State of Israel. It's a setback. It's a massive setback. But we don't have to we don't have to reconcile ourselves to that setback. We can bring the import of what we want to bring into the international arena on a better basis, basis that's supported by the achievement of our brothers and sisters in southern Africa on an anti-apartheid basis. And if I have a hope that I can share with you is that within the next decade or 15 years, we will see United Nations, through the United Nations, a covenant for the suppression and punishment of political Zionism as a crime against humanity. Thank you very much.